This is Art Moves, a series of curated conversations at the dynamic intersection of art, innovation, and social justice. Each week, we'll be talking to the visionary thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts while redefining what it means to be creative. I'm Toni Williams.
And I'm Eli Kaslansky, and we're your hosts for Art Moves.
Joining us is Denise Aduse, the dynamic executive director of the Bronx Children's Museum and the founding director of a vibrant preschool. Eli, she's gorgeous. I just can't wait to speak with her.
I had the pleasure of chatting with her before.
Did you? I hope you didn't have the show before the show.
No, I did. That's why I'm going home.
Denise's journey is colorful, adventure-filled.
Remarkable.
Isn't it? And filled with creativity and cultural richness and a passion for storytelling. Denise, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm so honored to be here today and being able to talk about what we're doing in the Bronx. There's lots of exciting things happening and getting a chance to really talk about the children of the Bronx.
I'm going to tell you something. It's great to be in Brooklyn and to be talking about the Bronx.
Yes. B2B.
Yeah, so talk to us about what I found so fascinating was your background, your cultural background. Talk to us about who you are and how that's informed your practice.
Sure. So I straddle three different continents. My family is originally from West Africa, from the Cape Verde Islands off the coast of Senegal. I was born in Brazil. And raised there until I was about 8-9 years old. And then I moved to the United States. And so when I say I'm African Latina, I am an African born in Latin America and raised in the United States.
Do you find that people know who Cape Verdeans are?
No, most people don't.
They usually get to be from New England or Boston area. I know Cape Verdeans, many Cape Verdeans, yes.
So most people, when I say Cape, they think Cape Cod, or am I from the Cape of South, off the coast of South Africa or something. But we're a group of small islands. There are about 10 islands, 500,000 people. Meeting a Cape Verdean is like meeting a unicorn.
You speak Portuguese, correct?
I speak Portuguese and Criollo, and then learn Spanish here in the United States. Most people think I'm Dominican, and so I might as well learn Spanish so I can talk to people who think I'm Dominican, and a little bit of French. And English is my fourth language.
Oh my goodness! See, she's a quadruple threat, Eli. How old is the Bronx Children's Museum?
Oh, that's a huge question.
So we just celebrated our first year.
Our first year.
Wow. So the museum opened a little bit after December 2022, early January 2023, and I came on a little midway through February of 2023, and so almost 18 months. And we're very excited about being the first children's museum in the Bronx. We were the only borough that did not have a children's museum.
Which I find pretty amazing.
So
why do you think that was?
We're excited about being the first children's museum. We're excited that we opened the first children's bookstore in the Bronx as well.
Children's bookstore in the Bronx.
There's no bookstores.
That sounds cultural desert-like, right?
It's a book desert as well. So We're excited about being the first in so many ways, but that meant we were the last for a long time. And our families had to go outside the Bronx to be able to enjoy a kid-centric programming in a museum. We had to go outside the Bronx to find books for our kids. Kids in the Bronx, especially third graders, are not reading at 70% of third graders are not reading at their appropriate level. But
that's
how
terrible.
Do we do that? How do we have the an expectation that they do that if we don't have bookstores for them, if we don't have spaces where they are encouraged to explore and encouraged to play and encouraged to explore the arts? The first art most children see are in a picture book. And so if that's where we start, then we can finally bring them into the museum. And so even our artist of residence, he's an illustrator, he's a fine artist, and also he does a lot of great work in the community with youth development. We consider ourselves a museum with and without walls. So our space is a little under 15,000 square feet, but we also are in 20 schools. We are the STEAM programming for a lot of elementary programs in the Bronx. So for us, it's important that we're in the community. A lot of immigrant groups, a lot of people who are part of populations that have been historically excluded from the arts, It's necessary to go into the community and invite them, say, and let them know this is a safe space. This is a space that was designed for you. And so we started off on a bus. We had a big purple bus, and we'd go from schools to parades and to various different organizations and festivals and to let people know we're coming. we're going to be opening a museum soon and letting people know you are welcomed here. The Bronx Children's Museum cannot be taken out of the Bronx and applied to any other community. It's very Bronx. We have the Boogie Down Studio. We have casitas. You know, we have a book bodega. That's what we call our bookstore. It's a book bodega because it reflects the Bronx community. Our community is 90% people of color. 54% of the people in the Bronx speak Spanish. And so when you walk into our museum, you're going to see 90% of my staff. Looks like the community. And we speak Spanish as well. So from the art to the artists are all from the Bronx. And so we want to make sure that people see themselves, that we're a community mirror, and that kids see themselves, they can see who they can become, and their culture is celebrated in the museum.
So in terms of programs, if I were to go there, what can I do and what age groups are you targeting?
Sure. So we start at zero. So we have a special little area that is a, we call the nest for kids who are under 3 years old. And it's a protective area just for kids under three so they can toil and tumble the way that they do in a safe area. We can put your hands in the replica of the Harlem River. The Harlem River is right outside our window. And so you can look at the Harlem River and then you can play and build boats and bridges in the replica of the Harlem River. You can come and play in our casita. Casitas are found in a South Bronx. They're community gathering spaces. So we have a replica of a casita that looks like casitas that you can find in a South Bronx. We also have, our beaver lodge. So the Bronx is the greenest borough. People don't know this.
Really?
Yeah, of course.
So that means it has the most trees?
The most trees,
Michelin
the biggest park.
Has, right, has,
and that is and you got the Bronx Zoo. See, when I think of the Bronx, I think of the Bronx Zoo. Seriously.
Exactly. So
and the Botanical Garden.
The Botanical Gardens.
I think of, yeah.
And that we want people to associate the Bronx with the greenest borough. Hmm. So when you come in, the kids can pretend to be beavers and they can build out the Beaver's Lodge as well. And that is a way to work on your gross motor skills. And so manipulating our replica of branches and various different things. It's a way for kids to play, but also develop their gross motor skills. Our entire museum looks like a really huge classroom.
Wow.
And so there's an area for sensory play, an area for pattern identification, which is early math. We have an area for pretend play that's all about executive function. And so our museum is an art institution, but it's also an educational institution for young children.
This is very usual because invariably, and a lot of people, and it's a misconception, that they're less play spaces.
Right.
So it kind of misses the opportunity.
Well, the executive function.
Yeah, executive function, math skill, pattern recognitions, you know, gross and fine motor skills.
You can come into our Wonder Room and you're painting. So painting is the precursor to writing. And so, again, you're developing those same muscles that now translate into writing. And when you sing and we have performances, you're practicing your speech and being able to speak. And so understanding that the arts are the gateway to educational skills.
Isn't that something? That needs to be a quote. Arts are the gateway to educational skills. You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM. And we're talking to Denise Adese about the Bronx Children's Museum. Now, you were talking about executive functioning and all of the skills that will be developed so that that young people will be able to walk right into an educational experience and get the most out of it, essentially?
Yes,
essentially?
Exactly. So when we're working in we have these wonderful area that's replicas of various different patterns that you see in nature. Mm-hmm. Kids are matching patterns. They're creating A-B patterns. That's all coding. Mm-hmm. That's the precursor to coding. That's the precursor to early math skills. We want our kids to, at that age, that's what it looks like. And then we're going into our book bodega. We're really developing emerging readers. We want our families to connect with their children in our book bodega, in our book nook. We want kids to associate reading with love. And so when there's a dedicated space to encouraging kids to read with their parents, children grow up thinking reading is something that just represents love and it sticks with them. When they see books that look like, which have characters that look like them, it engages them even more. You know, and
she's exciting, Eli.
Oh, you have no idea.
I'm into your conversation so much. Yes, but that's,
yeah.
She's a great wonderful. It hits a lot of different kind of skills and areas, stuff like that. What's the connective tissue between that and bringing it into their real lives and also further down the food chain, if you will?
Sure.
So it's great they have experience at the museum, but then they leave and then it's just different environment, right?
So for many kids, especially immigrant families, they don't experience the museums as much. In Latin America, there are no children's museums. In Africa, there are no children's museums. And so considering the population that we have in the Bronx, it's important that we go into the schools. We have 500 schools and programs on our wait list to come to field trips. These are the first field trips these kids are going to attend. And this is how we reach them. So we spend a lot of time, we raise a lot of money to be able to get access for kids in various different schools. Because once they've visited us in their class, and I was one of those kids, my parents were refugees. Mm-hmm. My mom was surviving. She was not taking me to the museum. And so I understand that it's so vital that we go into the schools and then those kids tell their parents about it. And then we see parents come in with their kids saying, my daughter came home just so excited about going on this field trip, so I had to come. 70% of the people who are coming to the museum are from the Bronx. This is the first time families have a space that's celebrating who they are, celebrating their cultures, and they're excited about it. Children's museums are intergenerational.
I want to talk more about you. You were talking about that you were a refugee when you came here. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us about what that was like?
My mother moved to Brazil to escape famine in West African country of Cape Verde and then encountered a military coup, had me, and then she again left Brazil to live here in the United States. And she was a very entrepreneurial woman. She owned her business in Brazil and then came here and had to start from nothing. So she was a housekeeper. Mm-hmm. My mother would put me in front of Sesame Street and say, speak like Maria on Sesame Street. My mother's name was Maria. She said, don't speak English the way I do. So the way I speak, I modeled after Sonia Manzano, who's on my board.
Oh, wow.
And
nice
I'm going to try not to get emotional, to be able to work with the person who taught me how to speak English.
Of course, she knows this, right?
And absolutely, she knows this. You see, but the person who spoke that I model myself after celebrated children, created spaces where children are celebrated and loved. Mm. And this is who I want to be when I grow up now as the executive director of the Bronx Children's Museum. This is my mission, is to create spaces where children are celebrated, they feel safe, and they feel loved.
I'd like to hear about that journey from the school that you had developed, sure, and the why, and then landing here at the Children's Museum.
Sure. So before I opened my preschool, which was Pear Tree Preschool, I was a nonprofit management consulting. And then I got pregnant. When I was going on to business school, my husband and I found out 2 weeks before I was going on to business school that we were having a baby. Went on to business school and I thought I'd find a local program and I could put my daughter there. And I wasn't happy with the way they cared for her or the way they cared to interact with me. When I get mad, I open a preschool 2 blocks away from the preschool that didn't treat my child the way.
Get mad and get even.
Celebrate your child.
If you don't celebrate my child, I will show you how.
Before
I started at the Bronx Children's Museum, I founded and ran a preschool in Harlem that served about 1,500 children. We specialize in getting kids from Harlem into very selective independent schools and helping those families navigate the application process in New York City, which is so complicated.
It is.
But it was an art-based preschool, and I also got to work a lot with Sugar Hill Museum, the Guggenheim, and other museums in various different capacities. This was the perfect transition for me when we decided to close and move on, and another preschool is there now. But coming from an art-based preschool to a museum, I treat the museum like an educational institution. When children walk in there, they're going to learn a lot of different skills.
So I want to talk a little bit about scaling, right? Mm-hmm. Because to say you reach 1,500 kids, stuff like that, and I always wonder, what would it look like, for example, if an institution could reach the entire seventh grade in a borough? What would you need to do that? Is that who would you need to partner with? And what kind of program would that look like?
I think the entire seventh grade in the borough, those are the Bloombergs. We would love to be able to bring them
younger,
in. Younger. Oh, I'm sorry, in terms of funding?
I just picked that as I have no idea what help.
Yeah, the funding part, no problem.
No, but I know, third grade. Pick a grade and to reach, all the 15,000.
So if we could...
What would that look like?
I think, say, for example, if we wanted to really surf. So our museum is designed for kids 0 to 9, but there is a gap between what we do and how we design a museum and then the Bronx Museum. And so middle schoolers and high school students don't necessarily have a dedicated space just for them. But we're designing internship programs so that we can give those opportunities to middle schoolers and high schoolers. And I think if all our institutions did this and looked at it, we can work, these children can work in your marketing division, events planning, in the finance department,
right.
The arts design division is not just specifically just the arts. Museums have a lot of different needs. And so, a lot of different skills are needed to run a museum.
So in a lot of ways, you're redefining what the model of a children's museum is.
We want to serve the entire family.
Yeah, but it's not. No, yeah.
Yes.
And it's.
And sometimes they're the visitors and sometimes they're our workers. We feel the tech gap.
I know, but if I look at what most children's museums do, they don't do this.
And this is, we need
but
to change.
She has to.
She has to, but that's why I say she's redefining it.
Yes, you're absolutely correct.
And in some ways, that's what they should be.
Right, going to the people, so to speak. Yes.
Absolutely. I think the way we once our kids age out of the play and the various different projects and programming that we have in the museum, we want to be able to serve them a different way. And now you can be a model for that 5-year-old, Mr. 12-year-old, Mr. 15-year-old. Mm-hmm. And so there's different ways that we can definitely serve various different ages in the Bronx. For us, it's important that we have teenagers and middle schoolers, so we're developing a teen tech lab in the museum, teen tech lab, a digital art lab.
And good for them to relate to the younger students that you
absolutely
have there too, right?
Absolutely.
So you were talking about a teen tech lab, and what else were you mentioning?
So we have a teen tech lab that's coming soon, a digital art lab in our museum as well. We have a music studio for kids to work on music engineering and create beats. We're 400 meters away from the Hip Hop Museum. There's going to be families that are going to visit the Hip Hop Museum and then come see us, so we have to be ready.
Sure.
And so if we can create an art row on our street, on exterior street, we want to make it exterior gallery.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM, and we're talking to Denise Aduse.
Yeah, she's getting ready to have a whole corridor devoted to art and culture.
We want an invite. Well, I did want to talk about technology. I think the thing they miss is that there's a lot more technology that could be done in Children's Museum, especially when you start connecting it with physical activities.
Exactly.
You know, and the example I give, the simple one, like a water table.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's replicating a real water body, why can't we have sensors in it to tell you how fast the water is going or what the temperature is?
That's brilliant. Absolutely. That would be our next, I think that would be something that would make sense for our museum. I think it's making sure the technology is developmentally appropriate. Mm. And part of technology is also learning how to work in teams and being able to work within our casita and be able to tell each other what your responsibility is inside the casita, if you're on the grill or if you're in the garden. Those are skill sets that we all need to know how to work in teams. And we see often in a tech space, that's a skill set that sometimes is,
we've worked with techies.
So those early skill sets, that skills that they learn in pretend play, they translate to future skills that we need in the workforce. And there's also workforce development that we can do in a museum. So again, it's being able to expose young kids to the various different jobs in a museum and allowing them to rotate. We have a digital arts curator, and he's responsible for our multimedia and our social media, but also lots of our website. Getting an intern who can work with him on that would be amazing. So there's lots of different things we can do with different ages. But before we can teach our kids how to code, they have to first understand what is an ABABAB code. What's an ABCABCABC code? And so that's when pattern identification comes in.
Interesting. Now, you are a consummate storyteller, and you're an author. You're a book author. Talk to us about some of your recent projects. And I believe that there's a book that you've published as well.
Absolutely. So again, for me, early literacy is absolutely important. Like I mentioned earlier, the first art children see are in a picture book. Mm-hmm. And then we want to bring them into the museum. Starting at the museum, I also ran an organization called Black Creators and Kidlit. I worked with 250 Black illustrators and authors to help them navigate the publishing industry. I did this after I learned how to navigate it myself. And so I have
It's always good to pay it forward that way.
Absolutely.
Once you figure it out, share the blueprint, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So my first book, Cesaria Feels the Beat, came out on June 4th. And so we just had a wonderful celebration on the day of my release. That's the day we opened the book Bodega, the first children's bookstore in the Bronx. And so we have to be about it. And so if I'm going to push kids to read, I have to create the stories. If we can't find ourselves in the stories, then we create them. And so my first book is about a deaf girl who wants to participate in Carnaval, but her director wants her to wear shoes. But that's how she feels the music. So she tries to conform. She tries to put on the shoes. And then she freezes and she can't feel the beat. And so she decides she's going to operate the way she needs to, which is without shoes. She kicks off her shoes, and then her troupe, they are allies, and they take off their shoes too.
Allies, wow.
Allies, and everyone performs without their shoes. And it's really inspired by a cousin of mine who was deaf growing up, who I often had a really challenging time connecting with. But the way she felt music was by putting her hands on the speakers and really just feeling it through her body.
So I thought maybe also talk a little bit about this idea, you know, how underfunded children's museums typically are and why there's not greater investment, because we all know the power of early investment in children at early age.
And, right.
You know, is that because the powers that be or the funders don't see the value it provides society, or is it in part also some missing conversation that the children museum directors, et cetera, community could have where the powers that be that would shift the conversation for greater funding?
I think it's a number of those things. I think being able to really speak about the power and the role of art in education, having an education background, I can tell you that painting turns into writing. You know, I can tell you what those skills are when we're in theater, executive function again. In singing, speech. I can talk to you about that. I think we as children's museums are often seen as playpens and
the
entertainment.
Well, like it's an indoor park.
It's an indoor park. Yeah. It's not, it's more than that. Mm-hmm. We are a preschool, a huge preschool.
It's like unpacking
classroom.
It for people.
Especially,
especially these days, they're filling in the gaps.
Right. Like being in a borough that has a low literacy rate, or the kids are, there's a significant digital divide or tech gap, it's so important that we're addressing that. And we're giving schools that don't have these kind of programs inside their school a space to go and allow the children to explore in that way. So we are actually, we have a grant out that's to provide professional development for teachers on how to use a museum to teach various different skills.
So teachers don't really know how to use a museum?
Well, this is the first time mm-hmm. Bronx has a children's museum.
Right,
they've
right.
never had to mm-hmm. or never had this resources in their community. So we want to make sure that the teachers know how to utilize a museum to amplify or to really support your curriculum. And for us, it's really important for various different reasons. Again, like I mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but 65% of public schools in New York City are kids of color. 5% of those of the books they're reading have children of color featured in it. 2% of those books were written by people of color.
Wow. Content. And if we're not behind creating the content, that's why we see the content.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So we want our kids to be more engaged. Research shows when children see themselves in books, they are more engaged. So if we want that literacy rate to go from, we want that literacy rate to increase, we need to make sure we're engaging the children and celebrating their culture, and the kids can see themselves in our books, in our art. Like I mentioned, all of our artists are from the Bronx, and they're in the museum, and they work with kids and teach them. You can be a fine artist, you can be an illustrator, and there's so many ways that you can apply your art.
So I imagine you're getting support, or are you? What are the challenges in terms of getting the funds?
It is a challenge raising money in our neighborhood, the Bronx. unfortunately, we're in one of the poorest districts in New York City. And so we do have to rely, we rely a significant amount on government funding. We're diversifying that. Mm-hmm. The kind of pushback I've gotten is that some foundations wanted to wait till we're open for a year, or that I was in a position, this position for a year. That's when we need the funds the
exactly,
most.
Exactly, exactly.
And it's been a challenging year.
That's called
year.
Short-sighted.
Exactly.
It is,
and
is,
so,
right.
You know, the day I celebrated my 1 year, I was on the phone, hello. Yes. It's been 1 year. Yes. I'm here. We have so much we want to do at the Bronx Children's Museum, and we need that support from funders. We need that. We also need that confidence that we're running the museum really well, but we need that support from various different foundations. We do get some government funding, but we know that this year was a challenging year for a lot of art institutions. And we're hoping that we get into the cultural institution group. We're the only children's museum not in SIG, and we that qualifies to be in SIG.
And you do you are on public land. Okay.
We're downstairs is New York Parks.
So we're lobbying for her.
We're tired of being last.
Right. What's with the last thing?
We're tired of being last. Yeah. And when our kids shouldn't feel that way. Our kids should be first in something and a lot of things. And so we would love to be the first organization that's considered for SIG. Historically, there's not a lot of diversity in SIG. And so adding the Bronx, you diversify that population really, really fast. And we serve a lot of families that have historically been excluded from the arts.
Hmm. Have you been taking this, I guess, on the road? I mean, in a certain sense, like, it's a great model. This is what I'm thinking about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this could easily be great panels at, you know, the American Children's Museum conferences or American Alliance of Museum conferences. I mean, have you thought about that or done that? Or
absolutely. So we just came back from the Association Children's Museum Conference about a month ago. It was absolutely wonderful to be part of the community. It's our first time as a museum with a facility. I got to speak a little bit about what we're doing. We would love to be able to work with museums and really work on how do you make museums culturally responsive and relevant. We would love to be able to introduce how do you incorporate literacy throughout the entire museum? How do you incorporate technology in a way that's developmentally appropriate for your community and also for the kids in the museum?
Eli, you've talked about how to really make that, structure that so that kids are getting the maximum benefit from it.
But that water play is so important because at this age, kids are learning vocabulary words and how to describe these senses.
Hmm.
Learning words like wet and squishy. And so when you're talking to a child about what are you doing right now, I'm building a boat. Oh, what do you want to make that into? And then we'll just add a sail. And then you introduce vocabulary during sensory play. But also sensory play is also important for kids who have sensory challenges. And that's often how they soothe themselves so that they can actually pay attention to what they're learning.
How do you bring the parents in so that they understand this as well?
Sure. Yeah. So we have special days. For example, our sensory day, which was specifically for kids who have learning differences. We're now, when all these parents come in and are experiencing the same thing, they now have a network and a community of families who are going through and going through the same thing, navigating IEPs. And now they have a support network. We have special days where we serve parents who are teenage moms. We have a day where we had parents who were migrants and provided specific programming that was relevant to them, either in Spanish or in English. But we really do customize our programming to families and what they need.
So, you know, something I think you might not be aware of this, but there's a book called Wonderland, Stephen Berlin Johnson.
Oh, please tell me
about
this.
And the subtitle is How Play Made the Modern World.
Yes.
So what it does, it really connects this thing to like inventions of whatever, I won't go into detail, but how in some ways fabric and stuff and entertainment was what helped drive the Industrial Revolution.
I agree.
In Manchester and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
So anyway, it's been an absolute pleasure having you in Art Moves.
It sure has. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm so honored to be here.
You were just fantastic.
Thank you. Yes. This has been a lot of fun. This conversation is great.
To all our listeners, thank you for tuning in. For more information, visit us at artmoves.net. That's Art Moves with a Z. You can also listen to us on Apple Podcast and Spotify. Art Moves is co-produced with Brick Arts Media and recorded at Brick Studio in downtown Brooklyn. This has been Art Moves with your host, Tony Williams.
And Eli Kaslansky. Find some art that moves you and share it.